Ready, set, go. When do you start a new venture? The quote is, opportunity knocks, but it does not beg. This is Dale Callahan with Company of One, episode number 93.
Welcome to the Company of One podcast featuring Dale Callahan. Dedicated to helping you find freedom in life and with your career. Learn how to not only increase your income, but take control of the income you acquire. Let's ignite that inner entrepreneur in you. Now, welcoming your host, Dale Callahan.
I have an awesome guest for you today. We have someone here that's going to talk to us about leadership and personal leadership, Colonel Howard Ward. And he's a guy, we won't get in too much into his military background, but he's director of the War Gaming Center at the LeMay Center for Doctrine, Development, and Education at Maxwell Air Force Base in Montgomery, Alabama. He has come and done the honor of us to speak to our the Information Engineering Management Group. We have one of the people on his team that's actually in the group, so it's awesome that he's come and shared with us. And I just really loved what he said as a blogger and as a leader and as a guy who teaches about leadership. And so I wanted to get him on a podcast, and he had sent me a blog post that he wanted me to do. And I said, no, I really want to kind of talk through some of the stuff that you've got. Because, and I've taken verbatim his blog post that he sent me to me as a guest post, and I'll put it on there like that, but I wanted to get the audio to go with it. And so this is a little longer audio than typical because I got a little bit engaged myself in what he was saying. Some of the things really hit me hard about how do you deal with opportunity versus risk? When do you make decisions to take opportunities? When do you call it quits sometimes and go do something else? And how do you plan for success as opposed to just planning for failure? I mean, some real questions here that as I talk to so many of you that are sitting there maybe stuck in a corporate rut or trying to figure out what to do next, these questions hit home to me. So I think they will to you also. So I will post his information. This is going to be at dalecallahan.com // whatever you want to call it, 93, episode number 93. And we will post this out for you that's got links to his blog, which is criticaldoer.com. I love that name. So some really great information, but without further ado, let me just jump right in here with the interview with Howard Ward. Okay, thank you so much for joining us, Howard, and introducing you to Howard Ward. Thank you so much for being here with us.
My pleasure, Dale. Thank you.
And I was just we've been talking about this blog post, and it's going to be attached here at the DaleCallahan.com site. But the blog post that you sent me, and I told Howard I wanted to talk to him on the audio because he wanted to do a guest post. And I love it because it says in big bold print, opportunity knocks, it does not beg. And when I saw that, what is your thinking there, Howard?
Dale, many times when we're trying to figure out what we want to do, whether it's a new job, a new business, or pursuing anything new, intuitively that we know what to do and we know how to do it, but the when is what people kind of are flummoxed about the most. And in moving forward, when the opportunity is there, you know what to do and how to do it, but actually starting to move forward. That's what I wanted to address with this blog post, because many people will have great ideas and great plans, but will watch opportunity pass them by, and the window of opportunity closes. And that's why I use the phrase opportunity knocks. It simply does not beg. Opportunity will go on to the next person and present itself to that if you're not ready to capitalize when the time comes.
I mean, essentially, you know, in economic analysis, what we call that opportunity risk, right?
That's right. And what I wrote about in the blog, and I appreciate that segue, is that the when decision ultimately revolves around risk. People are doing a risk calculation of leaving a point where they are now. It's a known point, they feel comfortable, and going into to the murkiness of something that's unknown. And that space that goes between known and unknown is really what risk is.
Yeah. Now, you know, and Howard, as you know, I work with lots of corporate people. I mean, and I say corporate, meaning it could mean anything, but a lot of people who are, I would say, well paid. They do excellent work. They're well recognized for what they do. But those kind of people have lots of opportunities with them, and I find there's a strong hesitation to take a leap, to even if it doesn't mean leaving my day job, to start something new on the side and grow into it. I mean, you've got a long military career and seen lots of people making these decisions, which is what you're talking about here. This, essentially, we're talking about leadership decisions, personal leadership. Why is it that we're so risk adverse? Would that be the way you would call that?
Risk aversion is a very real phenomenon that stops a lot of great things from happening. And there's a few reasons for it. I mean, one, people generally don't want to fail. And they will start to frame something in terms of failure avoidance to the point that that's what almost becomes the definition of success. And that's a very different thing, whether it's in a large corporate type environment, in a military environment, or even inside your own home with your family, where you begin to define success as the absence of something rather than the creation of something. And I think it's an even greater phenomenon. The more successful or the bigger an organization gets, the more conservative it tends to become. And it starts to look a little bit more backwards than it does forward, and lose the recognition that the environment is constantly changing, and that we need to adapt at a greater rate than the environment to stay ahead and to be winners. And if we look backwards, then we're going to end up eventually consumed by the environment and never move forward. And everything that you'd hope to gain will eventually dissipate over time.
Hmm. That's interesting. And is it interesting? I mean, you're talking about a corporate environment. I know a lot of times we move people around. But you may not know this. You may have opinions. But in the military, you guys are awesome, or maybe that's not the right definition. It's very hard to get comfortable because you get moved so often. Is there logic, you know, in the system to that, to keep people from getting comfortable?
Yes, there absolutely is. Dale, and it may not seem awesome and comfortable when you're explaining to your kids, why we have to move, you know, for a senior year of high school or leave a situation that we're in. But the purpose in doing that in a military setting is to make sure that we have freshness of ideas, diversity of thought, and inclusion from all ranks and all technical specialties within the service to get the very best ideas that produce the very best action going forward in everything that we do. We learn a lot of things from nature, Dale, in thermodynamics, closed systems and open systems. We learn that open systems that interact with the environment, feed from the environment, they create new energy, and that's actually how they rejuvenate themselves and are sustainable for the long term. But closed systems, where things stay static, eventually go to equilibrium, and in equilibrium, nothing happens, no action. So, and moving us around a lot, we ensure that our system, particularly when it comes to thought and action, is an open system and not a closed system.
Hmm. Well, okay, so there's a whole lot of people that are listening to this podcast that are, I would say, probably, you know, the ones, you know, I talk to a lot of them via email or anything, and they're either kind of they're stuck in, many of them will describe themselves as stuck in a rut. They will, some of them are, you know, forcibly changed because a corporate situation's change or life situation's changing that's forcing them to make some changes that are either uncomfortable or they don't really know where to go. But I, as I'm listening to you talk about this and thinking about what the military does, there's something promising about that. But obviously you guys do this really well. in the middle. It's not something that you have to teach your people how to do, because this is the life they live. When you're looking at outside, what would you advise people? How could we take some of this? And you're making this quote here, and I'm noticing nothing ever happens when you want to drive the risk to zero. And I totally appreciate that. But how do you deal with that in reality when you don't have a, hey, here's your new orders, you're moving to this base, I mean, which is where most of us are not. How would you suggest people go about that? Any thoughts?
Well, sure, and I appreciate you picking up on that comment there. Although in a military setting, you can be issued orders. We also have this thing called service commitment, where at some point that if you're not willing to accept the risk of going to new assignments, new areas, once you've done your commitment, you can leave. So there is a choice to either accept the risk of a new assignment, going to the bottom, starting up, taking on a greater level of responsibility, embracing a new opportunity, just like there is in the corporate world, or you can go on. And the point is if you feel like you're going to drive the risk to zero, you've essentially just embraced your current circumstances. That if you ever do drive the risk to zero, you're not going to get there in time to ever be relevant. And the element of time is what people overlook, and is really what kills when it comes to making a fulfilled life for yourself. Back to the beginning, opportunity knocks, it does not beg. The perfect plan is rarely going to be executable in time to be relevant, when the window is opportunity or the open or the result actually matters out there. So some willingness to accept risk, it's completely agnostic to what you do in your life. If you work for a company, if you work for a military, if you're self-employed, circumstances change, opportunities present themselves, and you're either going to be willing to move forward and go to them or not.
Hmm. I mean, in this one point I've noticed is you get a, in the corporate world, a lot of us are, and probably in any world, but a lot of us are unaware at the risks that are happening, the changes that are happening. You know, oftentimes when I'm speaking, I tell people that they're, while they're sitting there listening to me speak, their corporate officers could be in a major reorganization that they're totally unaware of. While Sam is sitting here thinking, hey, I could take this opportunity or not, but I'm pretty comfortable, something on the outside may be, you know, forcing him to do something on a different timeline. And I think we're blinded to that. I know I've been blinded by that before, when you're like, oh, well, I didn't see that coming. But there's always something coming, right?
Yes. Yeah, there is always something coming. And some things that I've learned from following your blog and your podcast is a constant evaluation of your own circumstances and the environment around you. I believe in loyalty to your company, to your coworkers, to each other, and it's certainly not disloyal to evaluate your circumstances to see if there's something that's better waiting for you and time to move on. You finish your business where you're at, and when an opportunity knocks and calls someplace else, it's not disloyal at all to have a conversation with your bosses, your employer, whatever, and then move on when an opportunity presents itself, because the corporation itself is looking at changing circumstances that may require different skills, that may require you to move in order to stay with that company, and the company has to survive to do some things. So if the current circumstances are untenable for a bright future, then things have to be changed, and you have to be willing to change and adapt along with them. And the message from your podcast that go directly to my blog is to not be let that be a spectator sport. You have to be proactive and constantly evaluating your own circumstances or the circumstances of your company, and staying a step ahead to shape the future before the future shapes you.
I love that. Not a spectator sport. Yeah, you got to get you got. Somebody told me one time, you've got to get on the field, and I was thinking when he said it, I said, what you don't realize is you're already on the field. You just, you know, they're coming at you, whether you know it or not.
You're absolutely right. You either live life or life lives you. One of those two things is happening at all times.
But okay, so you've got this statement here, and I was that I just had some things I'd underline. Your willingness to accept risk increase as your willingness to accept risk increases, so does your opportunity. And I, now when I look at let me kind of throw maybe a curveball here, but when I look at risk, you know, a lot of people are thinking, well, I'm willing to accept risk. I'm willing to go off and take, you know, start with this new company that's a startup or has a lot more risk. And because I'm willing to do that, I have a lot more opportunity because there's a lot more of those things out there. But on the flip side of that, I think where a lot of people are is if I take this step, I've got this nice, comfy job. You know, everything's not perfect, but I'm, As I might take this step, the other risk they're thinking about is I can't come back. That I'm going to step out of corporation ABC to go do this one thing, and if it falls on its face, then I'm going to be living as people say in a van down by the river. I'm going to be broke, which is another risk, right? How would you assess that? You know, if I was coming to you with that situation, let me just put it kind of personal. If I was coming to you with that situation, you know, I'm thinking about jumping out of the corporate thing, starting my own gig. You know, I'm ready kind of, and we'll talk about your steps here. I'm ready. I think I've done your steps that we'll talk about in a minute. But I'm scared because, which I think is very, very real. The fear is very real. What would you tell me? You know, because that's what I'm scared of, is I'm scared that it's not going to work, and then there's nowhere to go after that.
I would say to you that it's okay to be afraid, but not to the point that it paralyzes you and makes you a victim of life rather than an active player in life. One of the ways that we start to make fear go away is to replace it with knowledge. I've heard it once that fear was an acronym for false evidence appearing real. So the way to displace that false evidence is with real evidence, and there's a methodical process that you can go through with risk, and it's simply the definition of risk is the delta between known and unknown. There are many things that you can control, Dale, that will help you convert unknowns into knowns. And the process of risk management by definition then is shrinking that distance between known and unknown until you simply can't convert another unknown into a known. And that pile that's left over is called risk. And then you start going through those circumstances. What if it goes well? What if it doesn't go well? And then having a plan to address it. But a methodology and a science is what makes fear go away. You know, you stop being afraid of the dark when you learn that there really weren't monsters out there as a kid growing up. You know, all those things that were false evidence that had you paralyzed from doing things. Once you gain some knowledge, you aren't afraid of them anymore. And a methodical process of risk management can help dispel the fear and let your dreams take flight in doing those things. So that's what I would say to you, is not just sit there wondering and what ifing, but do the hard work to do your homework and start to see how many unknowns that you can convert into knowns, and then come up with an acceptable range of risk. That once you looked at the circumstances, can you live with if it goes completely well, if it goes completely bust, can you live with the circumstances? And once you get an opportunity inside that range, that's when I would tell you it's time to pull the trigger.
Okay. And I'm hearing all that. You know, I'm thinking as you're talking about that, I'm thinking even my personal things that I'm thinking about, you know, that, you know, fear is real. And I never want to minimize that, because I think all of us is that's true for, and you know you're coming from I know so much of your background is military, and there's many things in the military world that the fear is not only real, but it's life threatening fear, but you have to do things anyway, hopefully calculated and planned out and supported and all those kind of things. But you've got like 5 points here, and I think we're kind of hitting all around this. I kind of, because they seem very methodical, and maybe they seem, it seems like you've got a process here of how to turn the unknowns into some knowns. That's my looking at it. So that's a layman's view. you've got these 5 points you begin with, and direct me if you need back to what makes sense. Prepare before you begin. Can you talk us through some of these? And
absolutely, be happy to. Preparing is the first step in doing anything and conquering fear and turning unknowns into knowns. There's some major aspects in your life that you need to have squared away to prepare you for it. And that's, are you physically prepared? It takes stamina, lots of hours when you're starting a new venture. You know, mentally, that you're certainly prepared to deal with setbacks, be resilient, and drive forward in the face of adversity. Spiritually, whether that simply has to do with what is important to you in life, or it has a faith-based meaning, it's important that spiritually you understand what's very important to you and drives you, and then financially prepared to be able to take care of periods where you're working through a startup, getting reestablished. The preparation up front is one of the biggest things that I think makes a difference between risk and another word, reckless. And those words are often used as synonyms sometimes, and they couldn't be further from the truth, because recklessness completely ignores the consequences and the cost of doing things, where risk acknowledges them and then goes through a very methodical process of reducing the adverse consequences or even unintended consequences of well-intended actions. So preparation is really what helps you to start to distinguish between risk and reckless.
You know, I was having a conversation with somebody the other day, and they're talking about an entrepreneurial venture and the idea that, I mean, there's this sense, this kind of cowboy mentality out there that we're just going to go off and we're going to kill it and we're going to risk it all and we're going to put our homes up for mortgage, and people do that, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But many of the more successful entrepreneurs I knew would follow pretty much what you just said. You know, I've seen people sell their homes, and I'm friends with a guy who's doing this right now. Sold his home, very methodically moved into an apartment, dumped some risk and dumped some financial responsibilities, and really cut way back in the budget. I mean, and this is just the financial aspect of what you're talking about. He was preparing, right?
Absolutely. A good way to look at it is that reckless is to risk what gambling is to investing. Controlled versus uncontrolled.
That actually makes sense, because that is the mentality I deal with so often. So I like that. Reckless is to risk as gambling is to investing. I'm gonna write that down. I'm gonna quote you on that.
That may be the first time that's ever happened, and it be in a good sense. So please feel free, Joe. I appreciate that. Thank you.
That'll be the only time you want your name associated with it.
Yes, I will take that risk. I think that's a good risk. So please, quote me.
Okay, then you talk about facts. How do you get to point number two?
That's right. I've talked with a lot of people when they're starting up a new project or something, and they say, it won't take a lot of money. It won't be terribly hard. But let's come back to the world of reality. We deal with money in numbers and not adjectives. And we deal in complexity through lots of different things besides adjectives out there. This is where you really do your homework and you figure out exactly what you're up against with it. And there's lots of things that you can do to build your knowledge base so that you can do that through taking classes, doing some research, talking to others. You know what you know, but Dale, you don't always know everything that there is to know. So getting your facts straight up front, not your opinions, not your intuition, but getting your facts straight and using descriptors that are appropriate for them and building that knowledge picture is absolutely essential, and being able to apply logic to your decisions going forward.
Okay. I like that, numbers, not adjectives, because I hear that so often. People are describing things, but there's no meat. And quite honestly, and I'm not that smart of a person. You know, when people are trying to describe these big giant visions to me, I don't see it. I think in communicating, even if I was communicating something new to you, I can give you this nice, grand and glorious vision, but you're going to start asking me the hard, detailed number questions.
Absolutely. Absolutely. How much startup capital? When will we actually have a sellable product?
Yeah.
Who's going to sell it? All those types of things come into play that, as adjectives, they don't mean very much. They're simply not actionable. But when you start to put specifics with them, now your dream actually starts to become a goal and is actionable.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. Okay. And then building a network.
That's right. Careers and businesses are about people just as much as there are products. And you should get involved with lots of people who know some things that you need to know, and it can help you. They can provide knowledge. They can make contacts, mentoring, or, heaven forbid, one of them actually becomes your customer because, something that you need. So be as concerned about people who could be your customers and mentor you just as much as your product. And when you've done that, it comes time to make a commitment and go to action. We talked a little bit about shrinking that delta between known and unknown into risk. Mm-hmm. When you get an opportunity that is within what you have determined personally as an acceptable range, it's time to go. I've seen lots of great opportunities squandered when somebody was looking for the perfect opportunity as opposed to an acceptable opportunity. Just like you probably see it in the stock market, the stock investors all the time waiting for the absolutely perfect price, and then something happens to where it's no longer a good investment. You completely missed the opportunity, whereas if you had a range, a high end and a low end of prices, and simply bought in and letting time be your friend, it would have worked out well, or any of a number of things like that. Once you get something in the acceptable range, pull the trigger and go, remembering that opportunity has knocked, but it's not going to ask you a second time and beg.
Well, let me divert there for a minute. Acceptable range of risk. And so I'm thinking about people that are looking at doing something else, maybe. So their risk is generally income. How do you... Are there key factors that you would find for what makes it acceptable? I mean, is there some logic that you might go through?
That's going to be a very, very personal decision. Mm-hmm. But the factors that you would think for, if you go back to step one and in the preparation, and particularly looking at financial preparation out there, you may look on flexibility to get through for a while on your 401k, or what do you have in savings that can help you for a long time, even part of how well you leave the situation that you're in. Do you do it, walking over a bridge or pulling a torch and burning a bridge behind you? Has a lot to do with that risk calculation and what makes it an acceptable range to go in. Because there are certain circumstances where you can leave, and I think most of us appreciate that if someone has a chance to move in from middle management to upper management, and that opportunity is not here, you can't fault somebody for taking it. Or if you're offered a substantial increase, everyone understands those types of things. If you keep it professional, there may be a way back home and more opportunities will be open. If you make it personal, on the way out, likely not, and you've increased risk and maybe even going into reckless with those types of things.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, and I've seen that a couple of times where, a buddy of mine went and took a job that was somewhat of a promotion, but it was also a big unknown for him. And so there was a risk, because of the unknown of the lifestyle he was leading into, which was a lot of travel, a lot of different kind of customers he was interfacing with. And he did. He did what it was that nobody faulted him. But when he decided, this isn't for me, I've done this, I've met my goals, but it's not the lifestyle I want. And he came back, and he kind of, as he told me, I came back thinking I want my old job back, and he hadn't burned the bridge, but he had, and he came back and his boss said, well, you've learned so much more. I want to put you in charge. And he didn't see that coming, so he left for a year and came back, and he had grown in ways that his former employer realized he had grown, but he didn't see it. But his former employer recognized, wow, you're so much more valuable now. And sometimes you don't see the opportunity that's even, I don't know what you would call that, but it's a hidden opportunity.
It is. That's a great story of a graceful exit that makes folks, still hold you dear personally, and then recognize the things that you've picked up and how you've grown on in the way back. And it may be that you know, that opportunity would have never happened there and can bring you back home. Whereas if your buddy had left right in the middle of a project that ultimately failed and was damaging to the company financially in the near term and strategically in the near term, that door probably would have not swung open when he wanted to come back.
That's so true. You're right. It wasn't even about making everybody mad. It was about poor timing for his current employer or customer. Yeah, good point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So your point here is then plan.
That's correct. Out there, and one of the things in the last step that I've laid out is something that many times a new venture will fail that you didn't plan for, and that was success. It's human nature to want to have a fallback plan if you fail. But many times we have not planned sufficiently past that initial point of success to be able to capitalize on it. And now the product becomes stale, and the next evolution doesn't go on, or you don't progress. You're not sufficiently funded, have the right people around you to help you grow, and the initial success from your venture fails. So I would encourage folks, when you're starting something new, to have a success plan just as much as you have a failure plan, to go one step beyond. Something I've learned in the course of my career is always looking at least two and three steps beyond. If I'm planning for something, to plan the next two or three things, so that there's always a place to go to from where you are, so that you never stagnate and sit still out there, that you're constantly moving and growing. So plan for success as vigorously as you do for failure, because as humans, we tend to self-fulfill a lot of expectations of ourselves. If all we have is a failure plan, we will go out and find ways to fulfill that expectation. But if we have a success plan for the initial point of attack and the next two or three steps that lie beyond, we have a greater probability of fulfilling those as well.
Howard, I've read what you wrote multiple times, but listening to you say that right now, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I'm guilty. Because I have found myself do that so many times, that you get to a point, and I can do it with somebody else, but I've done this with me. You get to a point and you're like, okay, I don't know. You get comfortable in that new point because you don't know what to do to move to the next point. There is no plan for success. And I remember it more clearly when I saw it from the outside, when I was part of a business and we approached a customer, and we had a little small geographical territory we were doing, and we approached a customer, and they wanted us to deal with the entire Southeast almost instantaneously, you know. And it was this, and I remember our technology officer having dinner with him right after, and his eyes were glazed over, like, this, we had hit this success point, but he was in shock. He didn't know how to deal with it, and that's what you're talking about here. You don't know how to take the next opportunity. It sounds like you're saying once you're planning for success is not only if that thing's burn and crash and burn, but what do you do when you? How do you jump into the next opportunity?
That's right, Dale. You have to have beyond line of sight vision as a leader for an organization to have a future. Long run. I did a blog post on my blog, criticaldoer.com, some time back, that talked about time as a resource, the same as dollars. The way that I use time as a resource in the organization that I lead right now is that I delegate time in the same manner that you would delegate tasks. Myself, as the leader of the organization, and my deputy, we focus on 6 months to 2 years out into the future. The next layer of management down, I delegate from today to 6 months out. And then the layer of management that's the hands-on supervision, they're totally consumed with the work of today. And in delegating time that way, whenever we reach an objective and we get to a point, somebody has been building the bridges and setting conditions ahead so that we don't get to a point and go, okay, what comes next? And there's no answer. Because that deflates the people in an organization and opens up a window of opportunity for competitors to eat you alive if you ever come to a point in time where you don't know what comes next.
Boy, you're so right. When you totally deflate people when you don't have a vision as a leader, and been guilty of that a number of times. And not to drag a military background, but I think it's maybe right now with what we see in our world around us, the military thing is so clear. I was talking to a retired Army officer the other day, and he was like, you know, you don't just plan for taking over or retaking a city or something that we've had to do so many times recently, but what do you do when you've done that? Now what do you do?
That's right. There's always something that comes next. No matter what you're planning or what your objective is, there's something that comes next. And particularly in the business world, when you're not continually evolving your product line, upgrading your technology, investing in your people as the required skills are changing in a very dynamic world, that now through the interconnectivity that we have in the world through technology, the skills that we have are so perishable and they're changing constantly, and investing in our people, not just in what to think, but how to think. And developing the skills that are going to be needed for the long time are absolutely crucial. It's absolutely giving a positional advantage to an adversary or a competitor, depending on the environment that you're in, if you're not constantly using time just like you would any other resource, and never be found wanting for an answer for what comes next.
Hmm. And that's one thing I've always heard about. And I may have even heard you talk about it, but, you know, successful leaders, they always have a plan, even though if their plan may be stupid sometimes, but there's this vision of here's where we're going. And when that does or doesn't work out, they've got another plan. You know, there's this, I think people want to see where we're going and they don't want to say we've arrived and let's just get comfortable and sit here. That it's not very exciting.
You know, people will help you fix stupid, Dale, but nothing happens when you're just flatlining as an organization, when nothing is going on.
Okay. Let me ask you this. I mean, let me go back. You have prepare for before you begin, get the facts straight, build a network, commit to action in the acceptable range of risk, and plan for success. I mean, this is, as I'm going in, and I told you before, you know, I'm going into a strategic meeting this afternoon, so this is making my, it's always shocking, you know, when I do something like this, how much I'm learning, and it's making my head spin a little bit. So if you're finding hesitation here, it's because I'm thinking how this applies to me personally, so forgive me for that.
I'm constantly applying it to myself as well, Dale.
I mean, and we should be. It's you know, people are always talking to me about leadership, and, you know, there's all this magical stuff about leadership, but I think there's a lot of it is just simple, that maybe we overcomplicate it. And what you're saying here is maybe not simple, but or it's not simplistic, but it's simple ideas. And you've said this before. I'm sitting here in a job. I'm very, you know, I'm successful. I kind of know what I want, or maybe I don't. And I think that's where I'm finding a lot of people are sitting. What's next? You know, what is my next step? I've gotten to that point of complacency, and maybe the people I'm leading are my family. Right, it's not so much my team, because my team's rather small, or maybe it's big, and the corporate stuff, I'm being led by people that have a bigger vision than me. Hopefully it's a good vision, but me personally, I'm kind of stuck, and I'm sensing it in my life. I'm sensing it in my family's life. You know, that you're stuck. All these steps here sound really, really awesome, and to me, they're exciting, and I hear people get excited about stuff like this. That person who's that stuck, how do they get? I feel like if they can get to the point here, they can take your steps and do something. How would you suggest you look for those opportunities? Any thoughts on that?
Yes, Dale. I would, in step number one, as part of spiritual, you know, preparation, that thing that has meaning to life and drives you, I would suggest starting with something author Simon Sinek said in the title of his book is Start With Why. You should really sit down and do some serious thought and reflection about where do you want to be with your life? You know, kind of complete the sentence. And, you know, for my life to be fulfilled, I need to do X. And that becomes your why. And then you can start to separate that from the complexity of the environment. One of the biggest obstacles to overcome in deciding whether or not to do something is that we will substitute factors of the environment, like the income, like the difficulty, the pushback that we're going to get from peers and bosses and things like that. And we will use that as a substitute for determining the righteousness of our objective out there. To help you have the courage to move forward and take some risk, you have to determine why and be convicted totally in the righteousness of your objectives. Once you have done that, you will recognize everything else is just factors of the environment that you will deal with in terms of risk management, but you will not let them be the things that make you stop and become paralyzed in fear going forward. When you focus on the end state and make that the basis of the righteousness of your actions versus the complexity of the environment. That's what I would offer up to you.
Okay, because you're right. The little environmental factors, Joe's offering me a pay raise of 10% and those kind of things. I mean, at a certain level of life, that's important. But I think most people that I'm, you know, working with, they're beyond that, and they really, and it's so easy to lose the looking for why. And looking for why, I think, for a lot of cases, is probably not an easy. I know for me, it has been a struggle many times.
One of the things that you can think about, and I wrote a post about this recently, is the difference between two words: success and fulfillment. Success typically being an external view of the value of your own performance, and fulfillment being internally derived. How do you feel about your own contribution, and how important is it that what you're making? And when we start to make decisions about our lives based on an external view that comes from success, the company I work for has some certain measures of merit of success. They're a little bit different than the way I view it. I feel fulfilled. Yeah. So does that make sense to you, Dale, that you have to be certainly at peace?
Absolutely.
Your own contributions. And I would encourage people that if you want to do more, that you focus on fulfillment more so than success, because now you start to succumb to factors of the environment that are beyond your control. You cannot control how others will define success, but you can control how you define it for you and stay true it. And you can only do that if you're truly convicted of why, and you know this place that you're trying to drive through in your life.
That's all. Yeah, we'll put a link to that post, success versus fulfillment, that you were talking about.
Because
I think that's so awesome, because not only that, I mean, most of us are past that point of, you know, we've met success, and we may not feel like financially we're there, but we're, you know, look around the world, you're there, and it's because, you know, there. For most people listening to this, if you're listening to a podcast on an iPhone or something like that, you're pretty wealthy. So if you look at a monetary success, to me, the hard part, Howard, is that success, they change the rules on success all the time. What makes you successful externally today is different tomorrow, which is frustrating.
It is because society writ large does change its definition of success, but what makes you feel worthwhile? That's awesome. The essence of fulfillment, and makes you drive forward. I can't control the definition of success that popular culture wants to throw out, whether it's a certain job title or whether it's a certain level of income or owning certain possessions or any of a number of things that you want to come through. What makes me feel like, you know, it mattered that I got up out of bed and did some things today. And if I hadn't done that, people would have missed it, and they wouldn't be in as good a place as they would otherwise if I hadn't been out doing some things today.
Yeah. Okay.
That's why people will leave, executive jobs and go back to doing something at a lower level sometimes, because they weren't getting that level of fulfillment as they worked through the politics, the budgets, and those kind of things.
Yeah.
You go, you know, I'm really happier and I feel more worthwhile back just doing basic engineering, putting plans on the boards, building things and things that make sense for me. And not to disparage anybody in any of those positions, but that's an individual decision. And somebody that does that, I would think, is just you know, gotten in touch with fulfillment versus success, while others do take on those larger roles, and they see the impact that it has on people's lives and their futures, and they do relish it and feel fulfilled in those roles. It's just a highly, it's a very individual decision, but whichever path you take, feeling fulfilled and knowing that what you did mattered is very important.
Yeah, I think to me, when you find, because you think about the people like the Mother Teresa's and all, you know, which took lowly positions, you know, that and yet wildly successful. I think there's nobody in the world that would not consider somebody that does something like that successful, because she's, it's almost the more fulfillment you have in what you do, the more the world might see you as successful in that ever-changing definition. And it's almost backwards from the way you would see it. Because I've seen a lot of those people who have kind of stepped out of the big roles and have become more successful, quote unquote, in doing things where, because they're passionate there, and that matters.
A lot of people would say that Mother Teresa was successful because of the acclaim that she got for her work in India, but she started for fulfillment. Mother Teresa That's cared right. for one person. Then she got up and she did it again the next day, which led to more and more things. But that's what she did every morning, was get up and care for somebody.
Yeah.
And through that, she was fulfilled. And it also met a definition that, that society writ large determined as successful as well. But she'd absolutely lived a life fulfilled because she did what mattered. It was important and was a blessing to others.
Okay, so we're going to do that link, and you're, I'll make sure I get that link, and the Start With Why, which is an awesome book. So, and I think that's where a lot of us are. So, this is a lot to chew on. I mean, this sounds simple. This is, I know you do a lot of this stuff on a daily, routinely basis, but this is a lot to chew on. It's even a lot for me to chew on. That this is, I feel like this is what I do, and maybe I need to just print this out and just have this in front of me every day, and that would probably be helpful. because this is I think it not only, it's not just leadership in the sense of what we're talking, this is personal leadership. This is how do you lead yourself. And
leadership is about people, Dale, whether it's starting with your family.
Yeah.
And that smaller sphere of influence, or whether it's the largest Fortune 500 corporation, you're individually dealing with people. And although technology and circumstances and things have changed a lot over the course of time, the human person is basically engineered the same as it began. It responds the same way to certain things. We
yep.
inherently want to do good. We want to feel filled, and we want to matter in what we are doing. So the principles of being a critical doer and of leadership are timeless. It doesn't matter about the size of the organization.
That's so true. Leadership is about people. And unfortunately, we have examples of that are not true. But that's we have wildly wonderful examples of that where people have done excellent jobs of that. So. Well, I know we're about out of time, and you've got to go back to moving your household. So,
oh, come on! Hopefully, I wasn't so bad that you're going to send me back to moving boxes out there.
Sorry, there's a box out there.
Five or 6 hours as opposed to moving.
There's a box with your name on it. Well, actually, there's probably many, many boxes with your name on it.
there is.
Even heavier stuff, right?
But Dale, I really appreciate you letting me spend some time with you today. I've been a big fan of your podcast and your blogs ever since you allowed me the honor of speaking with your IEM clients last summer. I've really gotten a lot out of them, and consider it an honor to spend some time and share with your listeners today.
Well, thank you so much for being here, and we'll get you information on this. And thank you guys for listening. If you have any questions for – oh, yeah, Howard, if you want to throw in, what's the best way if somebody wants to – reach you or read about some of this stuff, and I'll put links in here. Just if you'll share with them an audio, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
Certainly. I write a blog. It's called Critical Doer, com. It's about turning critical thinking into critical doing, and it runs the gamut of stories of very personal stories of folks that that meet the definition of being a critical doer. There's some more mechanical how-to pieces on logic and thought patterns and management techniques and overarching concepts. So you'll find something, regardless of your demographic, you'll find something on the blog for you, and it's criticaldoer.com. And there'll be a link to an email address, criticaldoer@gmail.com, if you'd like to send me an email or post a comment to the site. And you can also follow it on Facebook, Twitter, and Google+.
Awesome. All right, Howard, thank you so much for being with us.
Dale, what an honor. Thank you for letting me share some time with you today.
So thank you so much for Howard Ward joining us here. And I will put links again at dalecallahan.com. /93 to his blog, which is criticaldoer.com, and Howard's, you know, information. He's really got some nuggets there. I feel bad because I haven't looked at it in quite the detail, but some really awesome stuff, and I think you can probably tell that. Again, this will be at dalecallahan.com/93, and by the way, we're coming up on 100 episodes, episodes, but I'm looking at what to do for something special there. So anybody's got any great ideas, a couple of you've already shared them. Thank you so much. And I'm still doing coaching calls with those people that are leaving me podcast reviews. So anybody wants to do that, obviously doing podcast reviews is on iTunes is a little more challenging than I thought sometimes. So thank you so much for those that have done that and that are hooking up with me that we can do some coaching. So again, I'm doing that free. So this is out of bribery maybe. So thank you for being here with us. And again, there'll be links on how to get in touch with Howard Ward.